All right, Gary, what are we playing this week?
Okay, we're playing musical chairs.
How fun. Actually, yeah. I don't like this game. It's very stressful.
It's very stressful, but I think it is legitimately perhaps a randomization we haven't used.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I've got all these chairs here, and I'm going to ask Gwen to come up with like a cool, like a techno remix of All Around the Mulberry Bush to play.
Okay. All right.
Here, and you just have to go around. And we'll see which chair you sit in.
Okay. So it's just me. Are there other people here?
No. Musical chairs is for 1 to 5 players. It's a solo game now. You can play it by yourself if you like.
Yeah, they don't put it on the box, but with a couple easy modifications.
Yeah. It's one of the hacks I learned from BoardGameGeek.com.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, here I go, I guess. I mean, I could just look and see what's on the chairs.
There's no games on the chairs.
Oh. All right.
Don't try to guess my ways.
Okay. Well, I guess I'm just going to... I mean, wow.
Get around the fucking mulberry bush and stop talking.
Okay. I'm talking while I'm moving.
Okay. Get around that mulberry bush.
Yeah. Stop it. All right. Okay. I don't know why I hurried. It's just me. There are so many chairs.
Yeah. There is a sniper. It's a different kind of musical chairs. You do have to sit down. That's
optional. Surprise Squid Game. I knew it. Even when I didn't know it.
No, you sat in a silver chair.
Oh.
I wonder if there are any games with silver chair on the soundtrack. The game computer says no. But there is a game with 11 bands that are indistinguishable from Silverchair.
Is that a Narnia band? What is that?
Oh, it's an Australian grunge band.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, from the 90s. It looks like Quarantine had a bunch of Silverchair-esque music.
Okay.
AKA Hard Rock Cab, AKA Death Throttle.
No.
Nah. Nope, not for me.
Nope.
My name is Gary Butterfield, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And stay tuned after Abject Suffering for our new show, Gabagool School, where you rate the latest and greatest in deli meats.
Yeah. Not a lot changing in that world.
Mm-hmm. Slow and steady.
Mm-hmm. Evergreen content is what it is. Not evergreen, the 3DO, especially not evergreen, Quarantine. This game that is unplayable doom with a car motif.
Really bad maze doom.
Yeah.
With a car motif. Not good. Nothing to it. It's kind of crazy taxi-y.
Yeah, you do have to like you stop and pick up clients. You pick up rides and you have to get them to a place. And there are just cars that are trying to shoot you. And I never properly delivered a fare because the draw distance on this game, I don't even know if it's technically draw distance, is roughly, I think, like 5 yards.
A little fog simulator kind of thing.
Yeah, but not used for fear or effect. So you would get you would get going, and by the time you saw that there was a wall in front of you, I would not be able to turn or brake.
Yeah. Yeah, and you can shoot enemies if you want to as well, but it's pretty bad. It's pretty close to unplayable. It's also, I feel like it's trying to launch like a universe and an aesthetic more than a game.
Oh my God, yeah, yeah.
You know?
We're trying to do like a Demolition Man kind of thing here. Way too many like plot movements before the game even begins. And the game and its cinematics don't even really try to tell you anything other than here is this kind of grungy dude who happens to be a cabbie who sleeps in his cab.
Yeah. Aspirational.
My favorite thing about the introduction, it goes on forever. That is not my favorite thing, but this is supposed to be a just purely hellish, you know, just post-capitalist, you know, terrible dystopia or whatever. At one point in the opening cinematic, he does eat what appears to be a pristine Wendy's spicy chicken sandwich that just happens to be sitting on his passenger seat.
It's kind of recognizable as such. Yeah.
As somebody who has eaten plenty of those in my time, it is distinctly that.
This is likely to be a digression heavy episode of this.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that gives me a bonus digression. I came in with planned digressions.
Okay.
For this. But I've been rewatching or have brought Cutthroat Kitchen back into my life.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, I've been watching it. And I watched one of them where the theme was, it was a football themed. It was like game day.
Okay.
And they had a football player as the judge.
All right.
And the second thing they had to make was a crispy chicken sandwich, right?
Okay.
Alton Brown goes, how do you feel about a crispy chicken sandwich? And my man, this like very calming, kind of dead voiced, like perhaps has taken too many hits football guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Says, I've had fried chicken before, but I have never had a fried chicken sandwich. And see everyone's like response to this, like, and then his first three chicken sandwiches he's ever had were made like while somebody like had to wear a backwards helmet and somebody had to like mix with a football and stuff.
Yeah, really weird. That is a nonfiction version of Charlie has never eaten a pear.
It's exactly that. It's just really strange. And his, the way he would talk about food was really crazy and matter of fact too. Like at the end, one of the guys made the, you know, the worst looking cookie in the world. Like the kind of cookie I would make knowing what's in it, but not knowing the proportions.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, like I'm not a baker. And ice cream is like, this is good. The ice cream is good and creamy and cold. I wish the cookie was softer. Good job. Like that's how he judged everything.
Okay.
The chicken is good. It's spicy. I like the sauce. The bread is good. The chicken is crunchy. It was all just like statements like that. And it was the most like have been sitting, the, you know, hitting the head a bunch. Yeah. He was a wide receiver.
Oh, you know, oh, like, absolutely. Those
guys get tackled a lot, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's their job to get tackled. Yeah. No, his bell's been rung too much. Won't ring no more.
Yeah. It is amazing to see. And I love that they had him judge a fried chicken sandwich. And my first thought for that was like, you ask the judges, if you have guest judges, whether they've had the food. You can't imagine somebody who hasn't had a fried chicken sandwich.
Right. It's really like, if somebody was like, if they grew up so rich that they might as well be from an alien planet, I could believe it. Somebody who probably came up through high school, college, and then pro ball, that is... I don't think that you get a lot of Thurston Howells in that pipeline.
No. Like, I ordered an abalone sandwich, not a bologna sandwich, perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah. You know?
But I don't tend to think of that as like a football playing guy.
Right.
I'm just, I would put money that like most people I meet have had a fried chicken sandwich. And like a lot of money.
Let us know. I also... Man, I'm trying to imagine a culture where somebody would not fry a chicken and put some bread around it.
And he would fry a chicken. He's like, I have had fried chicken, but I have not had a fried chicken sandwich. He kind of talked like a robot.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, first, also like a weird thing to never try if you're okay with fried chicken. Like the exception here is like vegetarians, right? Like,
yes.
I get that, you know, but eating fried chicken, but not trying it on a sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
That's just really wild to me.
Yeah, no. just think, I want to eat this fried chicken, but I don't want my fingers to sully it. Perchance, I could enlist a buffer of bread. Yeah. Man, so like later on, I need to go and look because it was just added to another streaming service that I have. Whenever they do that, there's always like a season, like an entire season I haven't seen.
That's what we're doing now. Like we watched the recent ones and then this is the last season. There's probably a couple of them I haven't seen, but this is the previous season.
Yes. But like in those last few seasons, it's all theme episodes like that. It's all I don't fucking know, man. And like the one that sends me every time I see it is the Man Cave special where Will, where Bill Shatner is the judge. And he's not bringing any of the heat. He is mailing it in. He is not phoning it in. Yeah. And just the Alton is very uncomfortable with that energy, I think, and is trying hard to sell it when nobody else is.
He needs to be the biggest personality on the on the block there.
Yeah.
The themed episodes don't bother me. Like, just gives you, I'm just here to see sabotages.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, this one had a pretty funny one. One of the guys was like a big Italian stereotype, mm-hmm. you know, like Italian guy who just says everything that's in a food.
Yeah.
You know, like, I'm gonna eat fried chicken, you know, bread, breading, eggs. I got my eggs. Like, he just says, and then he says ingredients. Mm-hmm. But they had a sabotage where his prep table was under a little cover, so he couldn't see it.
Okay.
And it was a little football field, and it kept changing angles, like a football thing would. Like, it was like fixed angle Resident Evil 1.
Okay.
Style prep table.
Oh, so he was watching, so he could not observe directly. He had to indirectly view
as they
cycled through. That is devious. Yes. I love that.
It was really good.
Hey, everybody, I'm so sorry. This is what this show is now.
we talked about doing the Cutthroat Kitchen show, and like, I would genuinely enjoy it. I fucking love that show.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, like, it's good. It's be fun to come up with challenges.
Uh-huh.
It's fun to see them happen. I love it's a weird show that has like the post game shit that's on YouTube. On YouTube is good.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where it shows the chefs trying it or them talking about how they actually did it.
Okay.
Me and Liv are going to print out, you know, we've talked about this before. My favorite Cutthroat Kitchen tropes is cutting to Alton Brown going, and then it shows the person keep cooking, and then it cuts over to Alton Brown telling them why they're wrong.
Yep. You know,
with food science. I'm going to get a still of that out and doing that and put it up in our kitchen. Like, legitimately, like, whenever we're cooking, we can look over and Alton Brown's like, how can we do this better?
Alton's touching his chin. Boy.
Like, there's too much water in this to use it as a vessel. Fuck.
Yeah.
You know, we should be using the microwave. Fuck.
Oh, he's going to say something about pectin right now. I just fucking know.
Fuck. Yeah, exactly. Like, love it. Goddamn, we could make our own tortillas. Like,
just, now how I just would wanna, do this? Oh no! Just, you might as well be digging my grave.
Yeah, just want to be disappointed in.
Uh huh.
You know, by Alton Brown all the time in my kitchen.
That is a very good. That is a very good idea. Absolutely do that. Yeah.
Nothing else to quarantine though. Sadly, I was expecting to get more out of this just because it is like a death race style game and like. You know, a death race, a car combat game, that's like something we haven't done very much on the network.
Yeah, we've never, have we even done, like, we have definitely made comedy out of Sweet Tooth, the serial killer clown.
Yeah, he's a clown who's a serial killer clown.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, we've made hay out of that, but I don't know that we've actually like covered a Twisted Metal game.
No.
Just stuff that is in the, neighborhood, the same neighborhood as a Twisted Metal.
I've barely played a played a Twisting Metal. Someday we'll have to scratch that off the list. It's a weird little micro genre.
Yeah. I don't know about WAF. I think that for Abject Suffering, we can pick a really bad one and then, you know, like, maybe we could do a roster run of that real easy.
I think it could be a WAF. Like, it wouldn't be that hard. Maybe, you know, 6 hours or something until you hit I get it.
Yeah.
You know,
to
see what the genre's like.
Twist a metal black or something.
Yeah. Twist my arm black. I have prepared for today. We're recording two Abject Sufferings.
Okay.
I've prepared three talking points to deploy over the course of these two episodes. And that Cutthroat Kitchen one was a bonus.
Okay. So that was just found money.
That just popped into my head. And the next episode is about, I would say, slightly more interesting subject matter.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. So it is, if we do two of them now, it's okay. But I'm going to start with a minor one here.
Okay.
When you were growing up, did you have in your awareness a lot of the three tenors?
The three tenors were always floating around.
Yeah.
Is the thing. It was kind of in the same musical valence of awareness as like a Kenny G for me.
Yes.
Yeah. Like this is, I think Kenny G is a little more cheesy than this.
Domingo and Carreras. Three. It was an opera trio.
Yes. And if you're trying to compose, if you're composing a D&D party team of opera singers, you don't want three tenors.
No, it's real silly.
Yeah.
And this is how they advertised the phrase, the three tenors had name recognition.
Yes.
There were nonstop commercials and PBS was like, listen, we know you don't care about the tote bag. We will give you a fucking VHS of the three tenors. You will complete your three tenors collection.
Yeah. You're going to love these guys. I love when I do a Google search for the three tenors, it only lists two of them at the top in the little like modules that Google AI does. So you get Pavarotti and you get Domingo. Third guy, fuck you. You're unpersoned.
The furtive pygmy. at what age, what year? So there's an opera trio.
Yes.
Active between 1990 and 2003.
Okay.
And they're relatively old at the time this happened. Mm-hmm. What year could you take the three tenors in a fight?
Okay. All three of them at once?
Like a boss fight.
Yeah. Like Ruined Sentinels.
Yes.
Style. Okay.
The Ruined Tenors.
All right. So they were active from 1980 to what? Early 2000s?
1990 to 2003.
1990 to 2003. Am I an adult? Am I a fully grown adult like I am now going back in time to show these guys who's boss?
What year would you have to be? So like you're not an adult now.
Okay.
When do they cross over? So, and it's worth noting one of them, Pavarotti, died in 2007.
Okay.
So if you choose after 2007, you're fighting the two tenors. we got here Domingo, currently 84.
All right.
You know, but a spry 84. And Carreras, currently age 78.
Okay. So they were pretty robust 20 years ago, something like that. It's probably embarrassingly late. I've never been tough. Mm-hmm. Like the crossover on this with their decline when they stopped performing together in 2003, I would have been 16. I was like tall but not muscular at that point. And I've got no idea what their past is. If I tried to make a guess, it would probably veer into harmful Italian American stereotypes.
Yes.
So I don't know that I necessarily want to do that. If I assume that they are, you know, lifelong performers, never gotten any scraps in the neighborhood, like it would have to be. It would have to be like when they're like two. Pretty close to when they were the two tenors. I would say like 2005, I'm about to graduate high school. Like it's me against three fully grown men though.
Shit. And in 2000, they're in their 50s.
Yeah.
Like that's rough. Like
that is really rough.
Kind of tough in the 50s.
No, I'm not going to try and save face here. I'm going to say like 5 years ago. I think like if maybe one of them had COVID. Yeah. It's 2020. One of them has COVID.
It's worth noting these are not Italian Americans. They're also not all Italian. Domingo is Spanish, but you know they won't necessarily have cool stereotype powers.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Three
ethnic men.
Generally so.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this because I was thinking about the three tenors and just like how I used to always just kind of know what they're up to.
Yeah, really, and 1996 and coded on the three tenors.
Big time. And now they're just not around. I was like, whatever happened to those guys? When I could take them, the trick for me would be they're opera singers. So I don't think necessarily they would like all sing a harmony that like shattered my eardrums or whatever. Like, you know, like a boss, like the opera boss from Freedom Force 2.
Okay.
I would get winded. The amount of breath control on these guys would be incredible.
Yeah, like, you're absolutely right. Although that is breath control for a particular kind of exertion. Your ability to sustain a sung note, like, yes, that has something to do with like general lung capacity. It has nothing to do with the rate at which their body uses energy. So like, you know, the length at which you can hold a note has very little to do with your cardiovascular health.
Okay. And they don't look like they're in great cardiovascular health, but neither do I.
Right. Right. Yeah. Right. So that's the thing. Like, I can't really claim any physical like upper hand on them aside from just the ravages of time.
Yeah. It's the question, you know, for me as well, surprisingly late.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're outnumbered, but also I think these had to be very old men. Like,
yeah,
I think it would have to be two tenors, and I think it had to be like yesterday.
Is it with my bare hands?
I think it's probably, well, that's a good question. I think that anything you get, they get as well.
Okay. All right.
That seems fair to me.
Yeah.
You know,
okay.
Cause they do outnumber you. So if you have like a, you know, a chainsaw, they've got two chainsaws.
Okay. Yeah. So like, it's not like, oh, I'm coming in with a short sword and one of them has a fucking trident and I just can never get close to them.
Yeah.
They don't have a
reach advantage on you. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Huh. I feel like at this point at their age, like, at least half of the remaining tenors is probably not ambulatory.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Well, so one of them sang on it, like preferred to sing on his back. That was a thing, like a little factoid, like, oh, this was recorded. It was laying down. Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking about that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know about the three tenors, but they were around. They fucking haunted things, you know?
Yep. Yeah, no, absolutely. It was real PBS. And that's probably where I got the most exposure to them because my stepmom was real heavy into PBS kind of stuff. And also Italian American.
Okay. I mean, into Italian American.
She was the first generation of her family born here. Like, it's like that, like, dinners at my grandparents' place over there were fucking amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was where I had the most exposure.
Mm. Did you remember commercials?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. It was a thing that adults were concerned with that I did not have a lot of, care for.
Yeah. It wasn't for me at the time.
No.
Either.
No.
And not now. I never aged into opera. Like, I'm not an opera guy.
I can appreciate it. You know, it's like, oh, they're singing real good. That is a physical feat. Neat. It's like looking at an athlete. I don't know those words.
It's like looking at an athlete, but it lasts for a very long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and there's meant to be a story. Like a picture of an opera singer I can appreciate. Like, that guy, he seems tall. But like, I don't.
When you are in like high school choir and you're doing competition, right? So like there's general competition for the whole chorus, but there's also like solo and ensemble. Mm-hmm. You know, I was very invested in this. Like, this was the competitive thing that I did was choir and academic challenge, like quiz bullshit. Mm-hmm. You end up singing a lot of opera style things because like those just end up being the pieces that are like optimized to be judged.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And you're doing it on your own or in very tight harmonies with just a random group of other people who you stay after school to train with. So I've got a couple of opera numbers in me.
Still.
Yeah. Yeah. One that I can do pretty much all of it. You get a little bit of an appreciation for the sustain that you need, especially when you feel like you're doing it well. And oftentimes when you are doing these competitions, you are in a classroom and just like waiting. So like you're watching other people go up and you're like, oh no, they don't have it. Oh, they're going to get a three. They're going to get a three. I'm coming up here. I'm swinging for a two, maybe a one. You kind of understand the anatomy of the phrasing.
Yeah. There's a lot of yes.
No, you're just trying to get me to move on.
No, I'm trying. It's a, the thing that pops in my head, because, you know, this show, when we're doing one of these and Guppy's the same, there's like a free association.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, thing. And I'm trying to say something that I think is true about myself that I'm not trying to add a moral valence to.
Okay.
You know, is where that came from, which is just like, I don't have the, I get into this thing because, like I it's related to my competitiveness thing.
Yeah.
Like I don't want to be good at something that I don't care about, mm-hmm. you know, but there's no moral valence to that. Like yeah. being good at something won't make me care about it, mm-hmm. you know, or trying to see if I can get good at something won't make me care about it. I either kind of care about it or I don't.
Yeah. And then
I want to be good at it.
Yeah. It didn't make me go listen to more opera. It was just more of like, oh, this is a difficult task. I am invested in being good at singing. Like this is something that I got like positive social reinforcement for. And there go, like, if I'm going to be doing it and this is a way I'm going to be spending my time, I want to do it well. Right. Yeah. And so opera just happened to be incidental to that. My actual investment was, you know, show choir, which, you know, was probably about as unbearable as you could imagine if you are not in it.
Yeah. That's the other thing I kept thinking about is like the idea of being in this audience, watching a bunch of perhaps bad opera people or yeah, amateur yeah. opera people mm-hmm. Do this. It is a real hell.
Yeah. Not wincing probably if you're a judge, you know, just like this terrified person. Yeah.
Yeah. It takes a lot of skill. They should mm-hmm. do a competition for teachers of not wincing. Like instead of like tell the kids it's for them.
Just, you know, okay. Yeah.
But it's really just a poker face for the judges.
Okay. And then those judges are being judged. It's a real Nathan Fielder kind of thing. Yeah. Just walls falling down left and right.
Yeah. Who watches the watchman? You know, just this idea of like, yeah, no, you have to behave with grace to these children who are doing something you hate in a sucky way.
Yeah.
And like the only possible way you can appreciate this is if it's kind of funny, but you mm-hmm. may not act as if it's funny.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You cannot.
I would do a bad job at that as well.
Were you involved in any like high school music stuff?
I was in a band.
Okay. So like, do they like a garage band kind of thing? You were?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't, there's no moral valence to this. It's just true.
No.
Like I don't like systems. I don't like being told what to do.
Yeah,
you know, so like the version of any rebel. Of this stuff.
Yeah.
It's not because I want to be cool. It's just the case. Yeah. I'm not a joiner, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like I don't want the structure. Like we tried to do the clubs I did. I talked to my wrestling story before. I tried wrestling one day because the guy made me do it. And then tried to join forensics, which was like the speech team.
Oh God. So you could learn to be an amoral monster.
Yeah. I don't know what that's where they like train date rapist. I have no idea what the idea was for that. Like what the end game is for that. Yeah. But you put on applications for college, which you then use the college to get a real job.
Yeah.
I don't know. But the, and I would have probably done that except that my partner, I joined it with a guy I was in a band with who mm-hmm. was a stoner slacker guy and didn't want to do it. We practiced like once and then he wouldn't practice. Like, the teacher who I've talked about before, the guy, the cool teacher, everyone thought was cool. And then like, you know, he dated students and then we found out like, mm-hmm. that's not cool as we got older.
Badass.
You know, the opposite of cool, but everyone liked him.
Yeah.
You know, because he was fun and funny, but like, then when they realized like, oh, that kind of sucked. That guy, Mr. Solomon, he like picked out a thing for me and my friend who had joined forensics,
uh-huh.
you know, and it was like kind of a funny script. Mm-hmm. And we were going to do the script and then, you know, this little two-person comedy thing. And then like my friend Ben just never wanted to practice. So we just didn't do it. And then I quit because he quit.
You were there to hang out with your friends. Yeah.
Yeah. Probably the one thing I tried to, and I didn't want to be like, can you match me up with somebody else?
Yeah.
You know, and I didn't like, it was a little embarrassing that he stopped,
mm-hmm.
you know, like there was definitely probably at the time a little too cool for this shit in my head. Like I was probably just like, I don't even give a shit. You quit, I quit. Mm-hmm. Like there probably was that. There's not that now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just the case of what I was.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
That's the closest I ever did to any of that though. And then I talked about this before. I love Cinematography Club, which we did. Cinematography. We just watched a movie and it was so the guy who ran the cinematography could fuck the librarian at school.
Oh, fun.
It came out later that he was Mr. Hirsch having sex with the librarian.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sick. And there's like not even a discussion. Like it wasn't a cinematography. Yeah. You know, but we weren't even like it wasn't like he gave us guided discussions about film. He popped on a movie so he could go plow.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
we would just watch a movie and hang out, which was fun.
Yeah.
But pretty questionable in terms of like it wasn't a club with any academic or competitive value.
Right, right. It was just a way to watch movies with other people, like a fun, like a fun thing to do. Yeah,
yeah. It was nice. A slightly bigger TV than we had at home.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. Now I so like the high school thing, like music stuff, like the choir stuff was like I had friends outside of that, but like that was also just a way to hang out with people that I liked too.
Yeah,
you know, the usual kind of thing. Like, oh, I enjoy doing theater, but also it's a great way to spend a lot of time with girls, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to bring to you or ask you if you were aware of like the weird horoscope like dynamics of what instrument you play or what part you sing. Being like somebody can say, like, I in the past have told somebody I played the tenor saxophone in middle school, and they said, oh, you are such a tenor sax player.
Oh, and I hate that.
I had no idea what it meant.
Right? I wasn't aware, and I fucking hate that.
Yeah.
That sucks.
And I've like put out feelers. You're like, oh yeah, there's definitely a thing. There's definitely a, you know, whatever. It's just like, it's the same thing for stereotypes about people with different voice types and stuff. Like, oh, she is such a soprano. It's weird.
My all of the blood that's inside my body is doing the stuff from the blood test and the thing. When I hear that, like it's staying inside me, but it's all freaking out trying to get away from it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I hate that.
Yeah, so I was gonna I just tortured you with that knowledge. There's not really anything to discuss, but this is something that is carried forward through adulthood, and you can just ask, like, hey, if I said the person sang soprano, like, hey, were you in choir? Yeah. If I said, oh, she sings soprano, like, what would you assume about her? And there's a whole series of like not just prejudices about people that they knew, but like inherited knowledge about it that is basically like Myers-Briggs but for theater kids.
There being an answer for that drives me nuts. It's one of those things, you know, it's similar to like any kind of personality test thing where like, I'm not surprised because people as a whole seem to love that.
Yeah.
I'm disappointed. And I have to like, it's that feeling, that reaction, like I'll be like, that's so weird. It sucks. And someone like, how are you surprised? That happens all the time. And I just need to get in the habit of saying, I'm not surprised. I'm disappointed.
Yeah. That is a weird thing for people to sort.
That sucks. I don't like that about humanity.
Yeah.
It's not surprising. I just don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
just like people being really disappointed that they didn't get like sorted into what they wanted, you know, kind of deal. Like, oh, there's something shameful about being a bass instead of a baritone, stuff like that.
Like, talk about shit. Like, there's just so many ways I feel like people seek to try to create hierarchies.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Outside of like the shitty ones that we just have to live with. Why are we adding more?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like it's already bad enough. That got us into this problem. You don't have to hierarchy yourself. Don't do their work for them.
No. Solidarity.
You know? Yeah. Like do not reduce yourself to this collection of personality traits that comes with a thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they want. Yeah. They.
They. Every last one of them.
Yeah. God, that sucks. What can people do? God, that fucking sucks.
I want to share one last thing.
Okay.
Do you know, so like all show choirs have a name. Have I told you what the name of ours was?
No.
Rainbow. We were the Rainbow Choir.
The Rainbow Choir.
Yeah.
That sounds like something that like tours schools to teach kids about diversity in like 1989.
Yep.
Like we're going to have the assembly for the Rainbow Choir.
Yeah.
Come through and like one of the stripes of the rainbow is wheelchair.
The teacher who named it that, very important teacher to me, you know, invested a lot of time and care into me. Very great. Very retrograde when it came to sexuality and gender stuff. So that is very funny that like the crown jewel was the most gaily named thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. That wasn't, it's funny too, because I remember Rainbow being like a general thing for a long time.
Yeah.
They probably grew up in the 70s, like Rainbow, you know, Rainbow Suspenders, right? Like Rerun, wearing Rainbow Suspenders. Mm-hmm. Rerun's not a Pride icon, I don't think. You know,
somebody's like, claimed them. Somebody's claimed them.
Yeah. You know, but it's just a thing that got like a non-derogatory version of the word co-op.
Yeah,
you know, co-opt, right? Like it didn't used to have that association as strongly as it does now.
Yeah. I'm not sure when like the flag,
the
pride flag kind of came to be.
Yeah. Even the flag had to like gain territory.
Yes. You know,
like it had a whole like this is just a bunch of colors together. It doesn't look cool to get past. Yeah. Well, a technicolor dream coat.
Fundamentalist Christians fucking hate that rainbows have been claimed, and they are trying to say that was the sign that God gave Noah that things were going to be okay. They have the gays have specifically taken that from us. It's demonic. Yeah,
it's a real weird thing for God to give Noah a sign that things were going to be okay after he fucking just murked almost every animal.
Like, yeah,
everything's gonna be okay. Kills four million blue jays.
The skies are silent. Having a rainbow.
Every jellyfish dies except for two. Everything's gonna be all right. You know?
Oh. Yeah.
Do you like cats and dogs? Tough shit, Old Testament God says. They're making a fucking dog soup of the world.
No, says the man in heaven.
No, says the man in heaven. There's gonna be crunchies in your soup.
Anywho, if people like the show, they can go to patreon.com/duckfeedtv and support us. There are 200 plus bonus episodes of this show waiting for you and whole bonus shows. In addition, you get to support us. We get to do this because of you.
Yeah. And there are two more talking points in the next episode. If you want to hear what those are, you better tune in.
Yeah.
Ratings, reviews, telling your friends, sharing episodes, all that stuff helps a lot. Thank you, our producer, Gwen, who had to find a techno version of All Around the Mulberry Bush today, which is hard. It's probably just a Google search. Let's be honest.
Yeah,
but I want to gas her up.
Probably. And she could probably just do one herself. Just like download a techno beat and then just like put All Around the Mulberry Bush over it. What?
Gwen's hourly. We're not paying for that. Don't do that, Gwen. You don't need to compose a special All Around the Mulberry Bush thing for my...
No, she's not going to... No. Just over, like, do it lazy. Like, do it in Logic. You don't even have to beat match it. Yeah.
Yeah. An hour or less.
At a certain point, it would be more effort to find the techno remix of that than it would be to just, like, duct tape one together.
At a certain point. I still feel like that's just a Google.
There's a point. There's a point where these lines cross.
I'm just going to find out. I know this episode's running a little bit long. I also want to have lunch, but I need to know techno mulberry bush. Well, it doesn't autocomplete. I'll tell you that much.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Oh, Brain Waltz era mulberry bush. That's a terrifying thumbnail. We'll see.
And until next time, this has been Abject Suffering, where I'm a cat now, Walter. I eat lasagna and hate Mondays. Meow, meow, Walter.